Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back, everybody. It's time for Toker Talk Radio. The phone lines are open at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565. And it's open topic today, whatever you want to talk about. If you got a question, comment, suggestion, criticism, or complaint, we're here for you. 650-LEGAL-MJ. I'm Radical Russ, live here in beautiful legal potland, Oregon, where I had the greatest flash of inspiration the other night. I've been dealing with a lot of stress. Let me just point that out, man. I've been dealing with a lot of haterade, a lot of stress, a lot of deadlines. It's getting pretty hectic. And so every now and then I like to just smoke a doob and let my mind wander on something frivolous. And so the frivolous thing I was thinking about was what it's going to be like after we legalize five more states and how many other places we'll be able to go visit to enjoy a nice smoke. And as I was ruminating on this idea, I had a realization. And that was, if Arizona and California legalize marijuana, I now have a route that I can drive from Portland, Oregon to Denver, Colorado, that will not take me through Idaho and Utah. I can avoid the prohibition red states. It's a long drive. Got to go all the way down I-5, all the way to Los Angeles, cut across I-10 to Phoenix. And then you go up this little highway that heads to the Four Corners Monument. Do you know what the Four Corners Monument is? This is in Arizona and Nevada and... All right, I got you. This one's in Arizona, Nevada, Utah, and Colorado. It's the spot where all four of the states meet and make the Four Corners there. And I figured I could drive up there through Arizona, hit the Four Corners, and then just jump over the corner and land in Colorado and never have to touch an illegal state. So there now is a route. And I took this and I expanded upon it and actually wrote up a big old blog post on weednews.co where I realized that not only could I get from Portland to Denver as a road trip, but I could also get from Portland to Portland, the one in Maine, if Canada legalizes. I could go north from Seattle to Vancouver, catch the Trans-Canada Highway, make my way all the way across Canada, and then come on down into Maine. So if you want to see the route, the map that I've drawn up, I've got 18,863 miles of road trip drawn up that takes you to 36 different legal cities. And only 0.18% of the time will you be on a roadway where marijuana is illegal, because turns out you can't cross the Four Corners as easily as I thought. There is this little less than a mile strip you got to cross New Mexico on. And then coming down from Maine to Boston, you got to cross that 16 miles of highway through New Hampshire. So there is a couple of places where you could get busted, but not much. All right, let's go to our phones. We got a call on the line joining us from the 918 area code. 918, you're on the air with Toker Talk Radio. What's up?
Hey, Russ. This is Corey with Illegally Healed. How are you?
Oh, Corey, so glad to hear from you. How you doing?
Good. I'm sitting here in Northwest Arkansas, and as you know, things have blown up today here.
Oh, yeah. We just had Ryan Denham on the show in the first hour from Arkansans for Compassionate Care. What's the feeling down there on the ground? People got to be pretty bummed out.
Listen, patients are bummed out, and more importantly, voters here, we feel like we were deceived. So when we went to the polls, issue 7 was on the ballot, and it was a valid choice. To give you a little idea of what was going on, issue 5 was a casino initiative. And open voting even started. Everybody knew issue 5 was not going to be a valid choice. Everyone was informed about that. However, it was on the ballot. Not so much with issue 7. When we went to the polls, early voting, is issue 7, is this counting? And we were told, yes, it's counting. And now it's not counting. So there's a lot of voters that they want their vote back. They want the chance to go and recast their vote because they voted no on issue 6 and yes on 7. They want a chance to go back and rectify that as an actual informed voter. And so we called the secretary. We called the polls, the directors over there, and they referred us to the Secretary of State, who then referred us to the Arkansas Supreme Court. And each person that I talked to at one of these offices, they agreed that it's not fair, and they didn't have an answer for us. We got the call back tomorrow. So that's the attitude here. But we're still fighting for it. We're encouraging everybody to vote yes on issue 6. And still vote yes on issue 7. There is a chance that we'll win this in court. So we'll see what happens. But that's the latest, Russ.
Wow, that's just terrible. I mean, that was the first thing I saw when I woke up this morning, and it was just a big bummer to have to see that. And to me, it reeks of shenanigans. I mean, you got a governor that's the former DEA administrator. You got a lot of people there in power that are anti-marijuana. And this is like the worst possible thing. I mean, if they'd at least decided this suit before early voting happened, then like you say, people would know there's only one shot at it, and they'd vote for issue 6.
Exactly. And the most disheartening thing about this whole situation is this was all brought about from our own camp, from the inside, from an advocate, from a lifelong normal attorney, and we defeated the governor and the Surgeon General and the Arkansas Chamber of Commerce. They had a lawsuit against us, and we beat that in spades. And we thought we were going to beat this case. The judge they appointed to review the case was on our side. Everything was looking good, and then this came at the last minute. And for this to come from the inside is just it's really a stab in the back to sick and dying patients that have been really advocating for this for since 2012. And I've seen it, Russ. You know me for a few years now, and I've seen what's happened here in Arkansas. And there's been patients out in the hot, in the cold, going door from door, gathering signatures, and we collected enough signatures. I guarantee you that. There's enough support here. So, yeah, you're right. The government is scared, and there may be some shenanigans going on behind the scenes. But for this to happen internally between advocates is just ridiculous. I think you've covered that in California a bunch, too, as well.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I've made my feelings known on this normal legal committee attorney filing this lawsuit. As far as I'm concerned, that ought to be automatic grounds for dismissal from the committee.
Yeah.
Normal does not agree. I've been in contact with Normal today, and their attitude is that lawyers have free speech rights, and if they want to oppose something, they can. That doesn't wash for me.
Hey, well, she can be a, you know, I'm not going to say it, but she can be whatever she wants to be. But hey, we're still fighting for it. And you know, we're encouraging people to go vote yes on 6. And so even though it's not the smarter choice for patients in my opinion, but whatever works, hey, if you need it, you know.
Well, I want to thank you for calling in and giving us your feelings on that, and give folks the website so they can get in touch with you guys if they want to commiserate.
Absolutely. It's illegallyhealed.com, or you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/illegallyhealed. Actually, we just uploaded a video yesterday of the Arkansas Surgeon General on live TV, on a live Facebook broadcast on one of the TV news broadcasts. They were doing a debate, and he recommended that parents go and purchase cannabis oil online and order it online instead of passing a bill here in Arkansas. So we're really backwards in our fight back down here.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, we wish you the best of luck. I hope some sort of relief is possible. Everybody, just vote on both of them. Vote yes on both of them, and let's see what the courts sort out. Thanks so much for calling in.
You're welcome, Russ. One love, buddy.
All right. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk just a little bit about the possible outcome of legalization's success in this election and how that might influence state legislatures that have so far been reticent to address the marijuana issue. I'm Radical Russ, live in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon. And remember, we got that Yes on Prop 64 teleconference coming up that we recorded earlier today. That'll be after our safety meeting. Stay tuned.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Legal to listen to all over the world. We're just not sure about France. CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
Previously on the Stoner Jesus Show.
St. Paul's doing good work.
It's my Greg here, Poontang, if I can use a medical term.
Yes, the New England Medical Journal.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's right. Well, you can call me Dr. St. Paul now.
Dr. St. Paul.
I don't think I will.
No. you wouldn't even qualify to be a vet.
I'm a special kind of vet. I make them less lonely.
The Stoner Jesus Show. Live Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Or find the Stoner Jesus Show podcast on demand at CannabisRadio.com and StonerJesus.net.
Peace, bitches.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Who's your favorite foreign leader?
I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment. I'm having a brain.
Well, name anybody.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
Get in on the ground floor of the cannabis industry. Join me at the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference, Saturday, November 19th, at the Ashland Hills Hotel and Suites in beautiful Southern Oregon. You'll learn the latest on rules and regulations from Oregon Liquor Control Commission Chair Rob Patridge and our lineup of experts in the Oregon cannabis industry and marijuana law. Plus, I'll be interviewing the legendary Tommy Chong in the closing session, who'll also be attending our incredible OMBC VIP after party with a live performance from Del the Funky Homo Sapiens.
Finally, someone let me out of my cage.
Get your tickets at OregonMBC.com and hurry, because early bird rates won't last long. It's the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference, Saturday, November 19th in Ashland, Oregon. OregonMBC.com.
Hello, Mr. Man.
Hi.
I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Almost 15 after the hour. And real quick, before we get into the topic, I wanted to make a mention of, you know, I've been dealing with all this haterade coming in because, you know, I support legalization. And one of the things I get all the time from people, and it's interesting to me, is the accusation that I'm some sort of paid shill. That I'm just a puppet on a string being controlled by the elite 1%. The latest on this, and you know, I've broken it down a billion times that, look, folks, I'm a toker. That's it, man. I don't claim to be anything more or less. I'm just a guy like you out there smoking weed, working, trying to get by, and would prefer not to go to jail. That's my motivation. You don't have to pay me to support not going to jail. I've been there, didn't like it, don't want to go back. That's my motivation. It's always been plain and clear. But I did have a new variation on this come in the other day, a new variation that I'd never had thrown my way, which was a fellow who said basically that I'm supporting all these lousy legalization initiatives because it's in my best interest for legalization to happen so that there's these big business interests that take over the marijuana industry who then need to advertise on media. And that's why I'm supporting it, because that's where my money's going to come from. Well, okay, I'll cop to that a little, because yes, I would love there to be legalization and there to be legal cannabis businesses. And if they'd like to advertise on my show, great, that would be fantastic. But it doesn't wash, because I've been doing this since way before there was cannabis industry. I've been in this since 2005. I've given lots and lots of my time and effort for very little in return. And I would continue to do so. I would keep going at this level if it were necessary, because I believe in freedom. I believe in liberty. I believe that we are good people, and that the banning, the prohibition, the eradication of cannabis hemp from this continent, much less this whole planet, but definitely this country, is a crime against nature and a betrayal of our heritage. Cannabis was a very large part of what made America America. It was part of our trade with the British, you know. It was part of our whole economy. It was what our founding fathers grew and would take in taxation. They would tax people and require them to grow this stuff. It was instrumental in our winning of World War II and the Pacific Theater, with all our ships that needed hemp rigging. It's a medicine that can help so many people. It's a great relaxant and recreational substance that could take away a lot of what we have to deal with alcohol in this country. So don't come at me with this paid shill bullshit anymore. I've been poor all my life. I got no problem being poor. I have no car, no home, no big ticket items that I own. I got no snowmobile or truck or ATV or big screen TV or PlayStation or Xbox or any of that crap. I'm pretty lean and mean when it comes to this fight. My net worth is probably close to my IQ. And you can take that either direction you want to take it, but I am not in this for the bucks, folks. In fact, I was making a ton more money when I was in IT, information technology. Very, very cushy gig, man. Working in a cubicle, typing all day, got yourself your 401k, your platinum encrusted healthcare coverage, got insurance, got expense account, all that kind of stuff. But then a drug test that found I had been smoking pot at some time in the past took that all away from me. Completely and irrevocably altered the path of my life to the direction it is in now. That's what motivates me. That's why I do this every day. That's why I travel over 100,000 air miles this year alone to promote this legalization, not just the places where I can make money at it, like California or Colorado. I'm going to Georgia. I'm going to Texas. I'm going to South Carolina. Often on my own dime, too. So drop the paid shill bullshit, will you, people? Not having it anymore.
Look, I inhaled.
So did I, Mr. President. All right, coming up next, we've got the Yes on Prop 64 teleconference. It took place earlier today. Tamar Todd, Lynn Lyman, and Deborah Small will be answering questions and presenting the facts on the Adult Use of Marijuana Act in Colorado. Happy 420, everybody.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. This is Lynn Lyman. I'm the California State Director for the Drug Policy Alliance, and we are very excited to have you all with us this morning to talk about Proposition 64. Just before I get started, I want to let you know that the call is being recorded, and if anyone needs a copy afterwards, you can contact Tommy McDonald at tmcdonald@drugpolicy.org. So let's jump in. We are here to talk about Proposition 64, the California ballot initiative to regulate and tax marijuana, also known as the Adult Use of Marijuana Act. As most of you know, I am sure four other states, Nevada, Arizona, Massachusetts, and Maine, will also be voting on legalizing marijuana this year. But California's initiative, Proposition 64, is really the best drafted, the most responsible, and the most consequential ballot measure for marijuana legalization anywhere in the country this year, and even internationally. Not to mention that one out of six Americans live in California, so it will more than double the number of people worldwide living in a jurisdiction that does not have marijuana prohibition. Prop 64 has assembled the broadest, most diverse coalition ever to come together behind a marijuana initiative. It includes the California Medical Association, the California Nurses Association, the ACLU, the NAACP, United Farm Workers, the California Democratic Party, of course, Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, Congress members from both parties, churches, environmental groups, and hundreds of other individuals and organizations across California. We've done a lot with this measure. As most of you know, it is a 62-page comprehensive measure, and we took what we learned in Colorado, Washington, and other jurisdictions and applied it to California. And if we win, this law, we hope, will become the gold standard for regulating and taxing marijuana responsibly while advancing social and racial justice. Prop 64 eliminates most criminal penalties for marijuana, stopping tens of thousands of arrests a year, and it's all applicable retroactively. So we are going to jump into the details of this and then be available to answer any questions you may have. So I would like to start by introducing our National Director of Legal Affairs and co-author of Proposition 64, Tamar Todd. Tamar Todd is not just worked on Proposition 64 here in California, but she has had a hand in drafting every marijuana legalization initiative in the country, as well as in Uruguay, and helping other countries that are now working on this. So without further ado, I will turn this over to our director, National Director of Legal Affairs, Ms. Tamar Todd.
Thank you, Lynn, and thank you everyone for joining this call. So as most folks know, Prop 64 is designed to legalize and allow for the responsible use of marijuana by adults age 21 and older. It establishes a strict regulatory system to facilitate this transition to the legal market, and it comprehensively looks at and addresses both medical and non-medical use of marijuana in the state by establishing a system that will provide for regulation and licensing of businesses, will provide for taxation and allocation of revenues, and also will reform the criminal justice penalties and provisions in the California Code as they relate to marijuana. Most simply, Prop 64 allows for the possession, transport, purchase, consumption, and sharing of up to 1 ounce of marijuana and up to 8 grams of marijuana concentrates for adults 21 and older. As many people know who have been following the issue of marijuana in California, a year ago, Governor Brown signed into law a series of bills that established California's first statewide regulatory system for medical marijuana in California. This initiative, Prop 64, looks at what the legislature and the governor already did for medical and adopts a similar framework of the same state agencies with similar laws to regulate and control the adult use of marijuana. There's a new Bureau of Marijuana Control that's centralized in the Department of Consumer Affairs, and the Department of Public Health, Food and Agriculture play supporting roles along with Consumer Affairs under this Bureau to regulate both medical and under Prop 64 to regulate adult use as well. There's also important supporting roles that are identified and funded and will be paid by the Departments of Fish and Wildlife, Pesticide Regulation, Healthcare Services, and the Water Board. In California. Now, California up till this point and up till the legislature's efforts last year and the efforts of Prop 64 has had a very, very large marijuana industry in the state and marijuana use in the state, but has lacked any sort of regulation or control over marijuana, which has been damaging and dangerous to the state in a number of ways. Whether you support marijuana or you don't like marijuana, the lack of regulation and control is not a good thing. It's been very damaging to the environment in California. Henceforth, Prop 64 tightly controls and regulates environmental standards and empowers those agencies to protect the environment in addition to giving resources to ameliorate some of the damage that's been caused to the environment. And that's why this marijuana legalization initiative has the support of a number of environmental groups, including the California Council of Land Trusts and the California League of Conservation Voters, among others. It's also been harmful for workers. We have a labor force that's not protected by labor regulation and labor standards, and Prop 64 will put all those protections and controls in place for the marijuana industry, which is why the initiative has the support of labor groups, including the UFCW. And finally, it's been damaging for public health and bad for children generally because there's no age restrictions, there's no controls, and Prop 64 will put in place strict testing standards for marijuana that will be consumed, labeling, package restrictions are all set forth and required by the initiative. Additionally, to restricting where marijuana can be sold to marijuana-only stores where only people 21 and older can enter. It strictly prohibits products that are going to be attractive or appealing to children, advertising that will be targeted at children. It puts all these protections in place that don't currently exist under state law. It also, as I mentioned, establishes a system that's going to parallel the regulation put in place by the legislature for medical marijuana, but it's very important for people to understand that Prop 64 does not take away, lessen, or restrict the protections that are provided to medical marijuana patients or their caregivers or their physicians under Prop 215. Those are maintained and kept in place by Prop 64. There are ways that Prop 64 enhances protections for patients. It adds some new privacy protections. When the new Prop 64 excise tax goes into effect, it will exempt patients from the existing state sales tax. It provides stronger protections for parental rights for medical marijuana patients, and it funds some necessary research on medical marijuana at UC San Diego, but it in no way diminishes the core protections of Prop 215 that currently exist for patients in the state of California. As Lynn mentioned, and as I mentioned initially, Prop 64 is also fundamentally a criminal justice reform initiative and a sentencing reform initiative. As many folks are now familiar, there's been data and documentation of marijuana arrests in California, the racial disproportionality of those arrests across the board, whether we're talking about the issuance of $100 tickets or the incarceration of people for multiple years for felony offenses. Despite similar marijuana use rates in California and similar rates of people selling marijuana in California, we arrest and cite African Americans and Latinos at higher rates than we do whites. And this initiative seeks to undo some of that harm by lessening the criminal penalties for a number of those offenses. It makes some conduct for those 21 and older adults outright legal. It then goes through and reduces a number of felony penalties to misdemeanor penalties to infractions, and applies those changes retroactively in an effort to undo some of the harm and the criminalization of people across the board of our prior marijuana policies in the state. And in doing so, saves millions of dollars a year in law enforcement resources that are now focused on enforcing those marijuana codes that can now go to other more important endeavors by law enforcement. And then finally, and then I'll pass along, the initiative, as I mentioned, it's marijuana legalization, but it is also most fundamentally a tax initiative that imposes a new tax and raises significant revenue for the state of California. The Independent Legislative Analyst Office has estimated up to $1 billion per year raised from the new tax, and the funds will be distributed annually to a number of different specific items. First and foremost, the regulations and the agencies are funded. So it establishes strict control and regulation and then funds that mandate. It provides $10 million a year distributed to a public university in California for research on the impacts of legalization and this reduced criminalization and how the law is playing out in California. It gives $3 million a year to the California Highway Patrol for at least 5 years to establish new DUI protocols for marijuana, alcohol, and other drugs related to DUI. It gives $2 million, as I mentioned, to the UC San Diego Center for Medical Cannabis Research. It gives $10 million that eventually grows up to $5 million that will be distributed as community reinvestment for those communities that have been disproportionately harmed and targeted by the war on drugs. And then of the remaining money, 60% goes towards youth drug prevention, education, and treatment. 20% goes to environmental restoration and protection, and 20% goes towards state and local law enforcement and programs to protect public health at the local level.
Thank you for that comprehensive and concise overview, TMR. Next, we'll turn to Nate Bradley. He is the executive director of the California Cannabis Industry Association, a former California police officer and speaker for LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He was also a spokesman for Proposition 19 from 2010. So turning it over to you, Nate.
Thank you. Thank you. The California Cannabis Industry Association is extremely happy to join the broad coalition that has been formed to support Prop 64. We believe that it is high time to sort of pull the current unregulated industry out of the darkness and into the light, so it could be regulated like all the other industries in our state. You know, we believe that Prop 64 not only is the best written initiative, but it also has the most small business protections, more small business protections than any other initiative that's ever been proposed to legalize cannabis. This bill would create a micro license, give priority to current licensees, tax, and there's a tax in it. There will be local tax in incentives as well. We also believe that we will create a million new jobs within the first 5 years. All in all, we look forward to continue to work with the campaign and to work with the state after it passes to make the best rules possible to make sure that the industry is a professionalized industry that also recognizes the needs of Indian prohibition in other states as well. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Nate. Our last speaker will be Deborah Small. Deborah Small is the founder and executive director of Break the Chain, Communities of Color and the War on Drugs, the first ever U.S.-based organization focused on racial justice and the drug war. Deborah is also a public health fellow at Johns Hopkins University and one of the fiercest advocates for drug policy I have ever met. Deborah Small, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Lynn, and thanks for everyone who has signed on to listen to this press conference today. I have three major points that I want to make about why Prop 64 is really a revolutionary initiative in terms of moving us towards in the direction that we need to go. The first and foremost is that marijuana legalization and regulation really represents a major step in dismantling the failed war on drugs, which, as we know, has disproportionately affected communities of color, especially youth of color. If Proposition 64 passes, it means that the entire West Coast will now have states that have chosen to move away from a criminalization approach to dealing with drugs towards one that really acknowledges that there should be a public health issue, specifically with respect to marijuana. And as many of us who've worked on this issue for many years know, that contrary to public opinion, marijuana law enforcement really represents the majority of drug law enforcement in the United States. More than half of all arrests for drugs in the U.S. are for marijuana possession. So to the degree that we begin to take that out of the mix, we're going to seriously dismantle and reduce the amount of drug law enforcement that takes place in this country and allow us to really begin to redirect our resources away from criminalization towards helping those in need of treatment and leaving other people alone. And many folks have said that the fact that California decriminalized in 2011 was sufficient protection for young people. But as a person who spent the first 50 years of my life in New York, I'm in a unique position to say that decrim alone is not enough. New York decriminalized marijuana possession in 1977. And for the first decade or two, it worked out fairly well. Arrests remained relatively low. But when we had a mayor who came into office who decided that he wanted quality of life policing to become a priority, marijuana arrests became a law enforcement priority. And we saw the numbers go from 5,000 a year up to a peak of over 50,000 a year. And 85% of those people arrested were young people, either Black or Latino youth under the age of 25. And while most of those arrests did not result in a prison sentence, all of those arrests resulted in people being shackled, taken to the station, booked, fingerprinted, and going through the humiliation of an arrest and having their names and data put into the police database that was kept so that they were then always constantly subject to renewed surveillance. And so to me, it's not enough for the states to decriminalize. We actually have to legalize and regulate. And as Tamar said, under the new law, young people who were caught with small amounts of marijuana will not face criminal penalties. At most, they'll have to go to counseling and face a potential fine. The second issue to me that's really important has to do with retroactivity. This is the first major marijuana initiative that actually provides relief for people who were previously convicted. And I think it's really important for us to understand that when you have bad policy that negatively affects people, it's important to change the policy, but it's also important to make amends to the people who were hurt by it. And I think about the recent decision by the UK to pass a law to expunge the record of all of the people who were convicted of acts of homosexuality under their bad policy. They understood that it wasn't enough to get rid of those laws, but you actually have to make amends to the people who were hurt by them. And so I'm proud that California is about to do that. And then finally, is the whole issue of the community reinvestment. While we know that individuals are hurt as a result of having a criminal conviction, whole communities are hurt when those communities have been disproportionately targeted for drug law enforcement. And so, again, while it's good to change the policy and to stop making those arrests, it's even better to decide that you actually have to take some of the proceeds of the taxes that you'll reap from this change and reinvest it in those communities who've been disproportionately targeted, who've suffered as a result of that, from lack of investment, from lack of economic development, and all the other harms that come from over-policing. And so according to the Legislative Analyst Office, communities in California stand to get up to $50 million in grant money that will help them to restore and empower them and to help them to repair some of the damage that has been caused by the war on drugs. And included in that is establishing and reinforcing the programs that will serve the people who are coming back from prison and coming back from the places that they were sent away to as a result of these laws. And so to me, this represents a huge advance. And I like to believe that the saying is true, that the way that California goes is a harbinger for the rest of the country. I believe that this is a very positive direction, particularly in dismantling the drug war. And my hope is that the rest of the nation will get California fever and follow us.
Thank you so much, Deborah. I hope so as well. So that is the conclusion of our opening statements, and I think we'll open up the floor for questions now. You can direct your question to a specific speaker or ask a general question.
At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your phone now. Questions will be taken in the order they are. If you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please press star 2. And once again, to ask a question, that's star 1. Our first question comes from David Brooks with Lionada.
Hi, thanks so much for doing this. Just a quick question. I'm the U.S. correspondent for La Jornada in Mexico, and the question is, does anybody have a sense of what the international implications and consequences of the California, if the California legalization proposal goes through, how would you want it to be perceived in places that are also affected by the drug war, like Mexico, and what do you think the impact would be?
This is Deborah. Can I answer that question?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, I mean, I actually think that one of the many positive outcomes of California passing Proposition 64 is that it's going to support and reinforce the efforts of many of our friends and neighbors in Latin America who've been calling on the global community to really reexamine our overall approach to drugs. And I was at the recent UN meeting where some of the loudest voices for reconsidering the failed war on drugs were coming from countries like Brazil and Mexico and Uruguay and Chile and others who have disproportionately borne the brunt of the drug war because of their role as source countries for many of the prohibited drugs. And as many of us on the call believe, one of the reasons that the war on drugs has failed is because of the way in which it reinforces criminal cartels, the way in which it empowers them in ways that are destabilizing to communities and in some places to whole countries. And to the degree that marijuana represents such a large part of drug law enforcement internationally, anything that takes it out of that equation begins to get us to move us in a different direction. And I'll just say this one last thing. I've seen the future of marijuana legalization or marijuana regulation. It lives in the Netherlands, in the city of Amsterdam, where marijuana use is as boring as going to a bar and having a drink of wine. You know, and that is the way in which we need. No, seriously, I think it's really important for us to understand that we've heard all these scare stories for years about what would happen if we ever moved away from prohibition. And yet we have examples around the world, including in the Netherlands, that started doing this with coffee houses almost 2 decades ago, but more recently with Uruguay and Chile, of the fact that regulation actually works. It works across the board. It allows for things that were in the shadow to come out and to be regulated by government. It generates taxes that can be used to support people. And it also has us to begin to move away from this idea that we should be criminalizing all drug use and that we should actually focus on what actually is a problem, problematic drug use, and direct our resources towards treating that as opposed to criminalizing people and locking them up.
Thank you.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, that's star one on your phone now. Our next question comes from Russ Belville with Cannabis Radio.
Thank you for taking my question. As I'm dealing with the folks in California in the in my world, the marijuana smokers, one of the number one fears that is brought up is that Prop 64 is going to somehow destroy Proposition 215, the medical marijuana laws there in California. Could you address that aspect of Proposition 64, please?
Sure. So this is Tamar Todd. As I mentioned, there's a lot of misinformation being put out about Prop 64 and its intersection with Prop 215. As I mentioned in my presentation, nothing in Prop 64 undoes Prop 215 or opens it up for future amendment. It does not touch on or change or lessen for the future the protections of Prop 215, which, as most people know, was actually a fairly short initiative that set out protection from prosecution for and conviction for patients and their caregivers who were using patients who were using marijuana as recommended by their physician. There have been changes to how the medical marijuana industry is going to be regulated and controlled, as I mentioned, that went into effect last year when the legislature and the governor decided to comprehensively regulate the production and distribution of medical marijuana throughout California. Prop 215 didn't touch on what the medical marijuana industry is going to look like or how that's going to be controlled. It really touched on the core protections for patients and caregivers and their physicians from arrest, and that remains in place. But it's also important to know that Prop 64 does not change or further codify in law permanently or really touch on the medical marijuana regulatory piece. What it does, it empowers those same agencies and that same bureau that's established to then also regulate adult use in a similar manner, but does not undo or change what the legislature and the governor did most fundamentally for medical marijuana regulation last year. There are a number of places where the initiative does touch on medical marijuana in patients, but those are areas where the initiative chose to enhance protections for medical marijuana patients. So, for example, some of those are protecting patient privacy in getting the state-issued identification cards, exempting patients from the state sales tax once the new excise tax from Prop 64 takes effect, protecting parental rights for patients explicitly in state statute under state law, and as I mentioned, funding necessary research on medical marijuana. So it does touch on medical marijuana patients in a number of ways to enhance protection and privacy, but it does not do anything to undo or lessen the core protections of Prop 215.
Thank you, Tamar. Russ, does that answer the question?
Yeah, thank you very much, and we appreciate what you're doing.
Wonderful. We appreciate you. So at this time, I believe we do not have anybody else waiting to ask a question, so let me just open it back up to our speakers and see if any of you want to weigh in on any particular issues.
I mean, the only thing that I would add is that, you know, the opposition to Prop 64 is generally resides within the same group of people that have always opposed any effort at significant drug law reform. First and foremost is law enforcement, which you would think would actually support this because it would give them a chance to focus on more serious crime. But we know that in addition to everything else, the drug war is a significant money-making tool for many aspects of law enforcement, one in which that, you know, they've been reluctant to see go away. And I think that that's important. The other group of people who tend to object or oppose any change are those who claim that it potentially will harm young people, youth. And as African-American, I have to say that I object to us continuing to have this, maintain this argument that having marijuana prohibition protects young people. It neither protects them from having access to marijuana, nor does it protect them from drug from law enforcement. And in many cases, as I've seen, it actually sacrifices a significant number of youth of color to maintain the illusion that we're protecting other people's youth. And personally, I object to that as both a mother and a grandmother and a person who's seen way too many young people's lives, you know, be ruined by the Head Start for prison that's represented by marijuana law enforcement. So I'm really happy that we have the opportunity to really change this. And I think it's one of the reasons why the NAACP and so many other civil rights and racial justice organizations have come out in support of this change. And I hope that that's something that you'll report on. Thank you.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, that's star one on your phone now. We have a question from Russ Belleville with Cannabis Radio.
Thank you. This question for Deborah Small. Deborah, the critics of legalization tried to diminish the racial justice aspect of it by pointing to Colorado and Washington, where even after legalization, there still remains a great racial disparity in the arrests for what crimes still remain. Could you address that from the racial justice angle for us?
Well, I think that's one of the ways in which the California initiative represents a much better written one than Colorado or Washington State, in that one of the things that we've seen that has been a disparity has been between adults and young people. And what happened in both of those states is that you saw a reduction in arrest of adults, but a disproportionate increase in the number of young people who were being arrested because they weren't protected by the law. And while the Prop 64 does not allow people under age 21 to have legal access to marijuana, it does say that if they are caught with marijuana, they're not going to face criminal penalties. And I think that that's really important. Right now, under the new law, if passed, there were very small circumstances under which a person would actually be facing a marijuana felony, either because they were selling to someone underage or because they were selling non-registered or non-licensed marijuana. But the fact that we're moving into a regulatory scheme, I think, is going to go a long way towards reducing those racial disparities. And quite frankly, I also think that a lot of it will be dependent on whether or not local cities and local counties are committed to the implementation of the initiative and the spirit of the initiative, which is to move us away from a law enforcement approach to marijuana to a more public health approach. That's the intent. That would be the clear intent of the voters by voting for these initiatives. And it'll be up to us in the justice community to make sure that the spirit of that is carried out moving forward.
Absolutely. And this is Lynn, and I just want to add to that and say that marijuana legalization is not going to end racism, and we don't purport that it will. What it does is reduce the opportunity for contact between police and communities of color. And so we did see in those states that while the disparity remains the same, the numbers drop drastically. So we expect that to happen in California as well. But we don't expect that disparity to change because it doesn't. Racism, institutional racism in policing is something that is very consistent in California and across the country.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, that's star one on your phone now. We have another question from Russ Belleville with Cannabis Radio.
I'm just full of questions today. This is for Tamar or Lynn. There's been some concern among the people I deal with in the community about the ability of localities to make their regulations with respect to cultivation, with respect to taxation. And there's a concern that some of these localities will, in essence, have their own sort of prohibition by setting the tax rates so high or by setting the regulations so strict that it would make it impossible for people to actually be able to grow their own cannabis. Any thoughts on that?
Sure. So this is Tamar. You know, the initiative does, and I will say it has a strong element of local control and a strong role for local governments to play. That's true also in the medical marijuana regulatory system that was established by the legislature and the governor last year. And it's also true of just the history of medical marijuana in California that has, up till this point, been, if it's regulated at all, it's regulated entirely on the local level. And the case law has interpreted strong local control, including the power of localities to completely prohibit any patient cultivation under Prop 215 under local laws. And that's the state of the existing law in California. So Prop 64 does preserve a strong an independent role for local governments in allowing them, you know, control over zoning, deciding whether to even have businesses within their jurisdictions or not, and how those businesses will be regulated. The area where there's less, strong government control is on the criminal penalty revisions that are contained in Prop 64. So it legalizes activity under state law, it reduces penalty under state law, and those penalties will be reduced, and that conduct for adults age 21 and older will be legal throughout the state. It's one of the areas, actually, because Prop 64 does allow a very limited amount of home cultivation within some parameters not within public view, in a protected environment, a secure space, allows limited cultivation by adults 21 and older. And that, of course, will also apply to patients who may now live in a jurisdiction that completely disallows any patient cultivation, which is true of large areas of the state. With that, though, is the ability, Prop 64 allows the ability of localities to regulate that cultivation, to control it, to zone it, to make regulations and rules so that it's not going to negatively impact neighbors, so that it's going to be safe and so it's going to be controlled. But it's very specific under Prop 64 that any locality that does so has to do so in a way that's reasonable. So the regulations have to be reasonably adjusted to accomplish those public safety goals. And so there is some limit there on what they can do that has to be reasonable, but then also has the flexibility for localities to regulate as they see fit and protect the community as they see fit.
Okay. I just to drill down a little bit on that, the concern I get is people are being told that they will have this right to cultivate six plants indoors that cannot be banned. But it sounds as if a locality could make a regulation that says cultivation is limited to zoning more than 1,000 feet away from a school, for example. And then anyone who lives within that 1,000 feet,
yeah,
they wouldn't be able to cultivate. Is that possible?
Well, no. I mean, so the initiative language does specifically place limits on a locality's ability to ban cultivation indoors, to completely ban it. But it also explicitly allows them to reasonably regulate it. So where it's not going to be allowed is at the point where that regulation does effectively become a ban. So the fear that people have that regulations will effectively be used as a proxy to ban is not allowed, but there will have to be a judgment there as to what point a regulation is no longer reasonable and effectively becomes a ban.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any final questions?
Go ahead.
At this time, I'm showing there are no further questions.
Okay, so if there are no further questions, I just want to thank everybody for joining and remind you that the recording is available, and you can reach that through Tommy McDonald here at the Drug Policy Alliance. Thanks, everybody, so much for your time this morning and for joining our call.
That was the Yes on Prop 64 press conference, teleconference that took place earlier today. And now, in some breaking news that I just attended to during that conference, there's been a press conference by Kevin Sabet and the No on Prop 64 campaign, joined by medical marijuana patients and the Weed for Warriors group. You can find more details on my Twitter feed at Radical Russ, and you can damn well bet we're going to be ranting about this tomorrow. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
you're growing, you're giant, you're rolling, you're smoking. You take a seat, you manage, you're growing, you're giant, you're rolling, you're smoking. You take a seat, you manage, you're growing, you're giant, you're rolling, you're smoking, and it goes down smooth.